Welcome back to Mound Money. In studio with us now, we have Tim Cooley. He is the executive director at the Park City Angels. He's also the director of co-working space at Salt Lake Community College. It's called The Mill, and it is open to non-students, The Mill. And he's also written a book that we're going to talk about today. The name of his book is Find Your Killer Idea, The Essential Guide to Discover the Right Business Idea. Tim, good morning, and thank you for being on Mound Money.
Hey, Doug, thank you very much for having me here today.
So you and I first met when you were in business school. You were a second year at the University of Utah Business School. You were getting your MBA there. Your career post-MBA has really been focused on entrepreneurship. Tell us why you wrote this book and what you hope people will learn from it.
Yeah, so I started really two ideas, one before I met you, and then Random Breakfast was the idea that I was working on when we met. And what I learned in that process was, you know, businesses take a lot of resources, and a lot of times we don't have those, or we will never have access to the resources we fully need. And I just felt like if people could maximize their resources, they'd have a higher likelihood of creating a successful company. And so that's what I built the book around.
So take a step back. Before we talk about the book, it might be useful to hear a little bit about how Random Breakfast works and how some of the things you learned from that set up some of the principles you talk about in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So Random Breakfast started with three guys. We wanted to do something in the health space. My background's in health. I have a master's in sports medicine, along with my MBA. And I met these guys who built games. And I was like, why don't we combine these to help encourage people to walk? So we had this skill set of game development. And so we built a game, you know, it took about a year or so. But then, like, we didn't have the money for marketing, and then we didn't have enough money to pivot, and games are expensive. And so we just kept running into these major roadblocks after major roadblock. And that's kind of what led to this new mentality change for me.
So a lot of times people think it takes a lot of money to get an idea off the ground. And eventually it does. But there's a lot of things that you can do to test out your idea, to see if this is what you want to dedicate resources to, and most importantly, if it's what you want to dedicate your time to. Talk to us about the building of a, how do you test out an idea in a way that doesn't take a ton of money?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. So one thing is like a lemonade stand. You can make the product, it might cost you $20, $30 to make, and then you just go right out and sell it. You'll find out pretty quickly if people are going to buy it. But oftentimes we come up with much, much bigger ideas. And in my book, it talks about how you can kind of craft the product. I call it the build phase of it. So you don't have to be real. You just have to look real. So one of the ideas in here I did was a deodorant product for gamers. And basically I spray painted someone else's product and tried to sell that thing. So
It turned out, actually, you could sell it to the game stores. It's just the gamers were a little offended that people thought that they needed their own deodorant. So you learned that having invested a couple hundred dollars in capital.
Correct,
versus
I knew there was a market for it. I just didn't want to take it to the next level. Like you mentioned, it was going to cost like $25,000 to go to the next step, and I just wasn't.
So you highlight a bunch of examples. So the deodorant for gamers is one. You also have, there's a pun here, but I don't think I could say it on air. There's a device for giving people information on their composting. Let's just say it was not a good idea.
It was not a good idea.
But I love one of the first insights. You originally spray painted a smoke detector black, so it would look like a device, and then you kind of faked the results that came from the device.
Absolutely.
But share with our audience one of the big insights that is some of the bigger insights you got from that.
What was interesting is that we think we need to go to market with a completed product. And, you know, we had a fire detector and a fake app. And when we gave it to people, they treated it like it was real. And I thought that was like, we didn't think that was going to happen. Like, we thought that they'd be like, well, it doesn't work. And like, I can't push this button. But all of that insight, you know, led us to like, okay, there's a kind of a market, but not really. Like, people don't care that much.
Yeah, and one of the insights you got from that was you originally spray painted, you needed a puck, something to put in the compost to give them an idea. And then you would give them information that you just manually typed out. The device really didn't do anything. But a key insight was you should not paint something that's going to go into composting black because it's hard to see. Paint it orange.
Yeah, right. Bright orange or something. Yeah, that was we had no idea that that was going to be a real thing.
The sound you hear in the background is the sound of expansion.
It's a huge woodpecker. It's a huge woodpecker at KPCW. So we're under attack here at KPCW.
We apologize for the sound, but it is a happy thing that we're getting our building built. Let's talk a little bit about the structure that you lay out when you call four steps to a killer idea.
Okay.
What are those steps? And let's talk a little bit how they work.
Yeah, so it starts with create. You've got to come up with some idea. It's kind of interesting how many entrepreneurs I work with, you know, even at the mill, where they're like, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur. You're like, what are you going to do? And they have no idea. So there's the idea of create. And then the second step is discover. So once you have this idea, you need to learn as much about it as you can and to get you to a prototype. So that's step three is build. So you get this MVP, like we mentioned before, you know, a spray painted.
MVP stands for?
Minimum viable product.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's the least you can do. I mean, we spray painted deodorant, right? Like you can't get any less than that. And then the third step is to go out and test the market. So using tactics of online marketing or direct sales or whatever. And then finally, it's really just killing the idea or making it successful.
So your book's very practical. And I want our conversation for people that are listening in to get a sense of some of the practical advice. So, you know, one is instead of building a device to go in compost and spending years doing that in months, you just faked it and then you faked the data and see, you know, was there value? And when you did your assessment, you discovered there wasn't a lot of value there. But let's talk about what some of those steps are to shortcut, to get information soon. So one is using available products and kind of changing them. With your deodorant idea, you actually used an online platform to help you raise money to see if people would pay for it and would also pay for your minimum order. Tell folks what that platform is and how it can be useful.
Okay, yeah, so I use a platform called Kickstarter. There's similar ones like Indiegogo. But what I did was, so my background is in online marketing, and I just knew how to reach out to influencers and bloggers, and that's what I did. And so I was on the top gaming websites out there. So I felt like I had enough of a market presence to really test that theory out if this product would work.
I think it's important we want to clear something up, which is when you talk about the composting app and faking it, what you were trying to test was there an appeal to the product?
Right.
We weren't fooling anybody. It was trying to see, is there something of value that people would buy? And that sort of goes to one of your other really interesting insights in the book, which are types of value. I really loved the way you explored different values. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what I've learned over the time is that there's four elements of value. There's economical, so what does the product do? Often referred to as features. That's functional, I'm sorry. Then there's economical, which has to do with does it save you time or save you money? And it can also be geographical. So like a pizza store, for example, like you can't get the same pizza in Denver as you can in Salt Lake. And then you've got social value, which is how others perceive you. So are you wearing Lululemon or Gucci or something like that? And then there's psychological value, which has to do with how does it make you feel? And all those combined, and you can tweak them and add to them and take things away to really sell anything into the market.
So, Tim, what's your thoughts on the value of an idea? You know, sometimes entrepreneurs are very guarded with their ideas. You and I were talking in the green room, and I shared with you, I keep a list on my phone of ideas that come up. It's I'm not at the stage in my life where I'm going to pursue any of those ideas. And when I meet with entrepreneurs, I show on my phone and say, pick an idea, you know, if you want to go with it. Should entrepreneurs be guarded about their idea? Are other people going to steal it? Or where is the value of the idea?
So the value of the idea is in the execution. I believe you should share your idea with everybody because you have no idea who you're talking to that could actually be the resource you need to move it forward. And a lot of times, like, you know, the book's about is not having all the resources to execute, because if you did, you would just go and do it. You can find somebody who's like, I want to do that. And that's actually how Random Breakfast started. Had this crazy idea, told two people about it, actually told one person, and then he brought in a third person to develop the idea. And I think, like, and we see this often, like, people are so afraid that people are going to steal it. And I mean, I've been doing this for 10 plus years, and I've never seen an idea be stolen.
One of the things you talk about is the value of realizing when you ought to kill an idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, in other words, when do you put it out of its misery? So let's talk a little bit about why that's important and how you identify that.
Yeah, so it's really, really difficult because So, you know, I work with At The Mill, which is a co-working space, and I work with about 100 entrepreneurs on a daily basis. And there's times when those people who've been working on an idea for a year, year and a half, and they should be killing it. And I think it's one of the hardest things because it's your baby. You
right.
put so much time into it. But I think if you remove the emotion and you get down to some kind of executable, like, do we have a sale, right? Like, do we have a sale next month? And how come we're not getting that next sale? You know, it becomes less of an emotional decision and you're more basing it on data.
So let's talk about that. So, yeah. You know, killing an idea versus it's a killer idea, which is what you have in your book. What are some indications that maybe you've got a killer idea or maybe your idea should be killed?
So one, a killer idea really is one where people keep buying it from you. Sales is the number one aspect of a good idea. And so if you're getting sales by accident, keep going, right? You may not know what you're doing. There's a lady I'm working with right now who has a hair extension product. And in a year, she did almost $400,000. And her website sucks. Like, and she's never done any marketing. And I mean, like, those are a killer idea, you know? It's never cost her any, like, she's never gone into debt. It's always been a cash flow positive business. But a killer idea is, you know, like, in Random Breakfast was one that got killed. You know, it was this company that we worked on, and I mean, we ran out of cash. Like, you know, we were living paycheck to paycheck, not even paycheck, we weren't getting paid. But, like, we couldn't figure out how to get our product to the market, and we needed way more resources than our team had available. Okay. You know?
Let's talk about what some of those resources are. Is somebody's got an idea, but they've never done this before, yeah. and so they don't know what they don't know. What are the resources that somebody with an idea needs to be able to get it to the point where they can test it out and see whether they should kill the idea or run forward
okay.
with it?
I think there's three. One, the ability to make it. So, and that can be as simple as drawing it on a piece of paper. And that's like the very, very basic one. But you got to get the product into a stage where people can actually exchange cash. And sometimes, you know, minimum order quantities and things like that prevent people from actually making their product or just the engineering itself. The second one is the skills set of marketing. Communicating the value of your business, that is a skill learned over time. And most people who are creators don't know how to communicate the value of their product. And we see this pretty regularly. And then finally, it's sales. Can you close the deal? Mm-hmm. And can you repeat that process of marketing and sales over and over again? And both of those are learned skills. And typically what we see is the creator doesn't have either of the latter two skills or the willingness to learn them. And I think you can learn the latter two without ever coming up with an idea. You could just sell someone else's product for practice. Like, it doesn't, I mean, throw $100 into Facebook ads, like, or five. And you would learn so much just in that process. You know, or dial to sell or go out and raise money for, you know, some political party. Like, the skill set of picking up the phone mm-hmm. to close a deal is not, you can learn. And I think people are afraid of those two things.
That is a little scary. You know, one of the things that we talked about in the green room that I wanted to make sure we got to was tell us a little bit more about The Mill, because it sounds to me as though it's an interesting thing that an institution of higher education like SLIC is chosen to do something that really doesn't affect students. It's more oriented as a true community service. The academy as a center of learning to benefit the community. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So The Mill is a co-working space focused exclusively on business incubation. So we bring in early stage companies, and our rent is very affordable. We start at $50 a month. So if you're comparing us to a typical co-working space, we're already saving you cash, which is the number one resource to get any business up and running. And so what we do is we provide like mentorship. So I work with a lot of the companies on a one-to-one basis or in groups. And then we do like a lunch and learn and bagels and business. So we're educating the community as well as the entrepreneurs there. And what we're hoping is that because they can save cash, they can start reallocating that into sales or marketing, which what we're seeing is a really high success rate for these companies because we can extend the lifetime of them.
So for my $50, I get a desk and a little bit of space. How does it work?
Yeah, so for $50, you get access to two classrooms, a conference room, free printing, basically, Wi-Fi, a co-working desk. And then you get, you know, access to 100 other entrepreneurs.
In which campus is this at?
We're at the Miller campus. And what's great about that is actually this was Larry H. Miller's vision. He built this, the Miller campus, to teach, you know, automotive, and the police academy is based there. We have a culinary school. So like that whole campus is geared around entrepreneurship or skill set development.
And for people that don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I understand the Millers made the largest single donation to a community college in the entire United States ever. I mean, whatever that donation was, I don't know what the amount was, but it was substantial and has allowed Salt Lake Community College to offer a lot of services they otherwise would not be able to offer.
Yeah, I believe that's true. I mean, we're a self-support program within the school. Yeah. But I mean, the resources in one building are the Small Business Development Center, SCORE, Women Tech Council, and all.
So I'll give one other quick plug for the Salt Lake Community College. My daughter's a senior in high school, and she's doing her senior year of high school at Salt Lake Community College. And I have to tell you, it's been a fabulous experience for her. It's been a lot of work, but the teachers there are very supportive and want these students to succeed. So I think Salt Lake Community College plays a important role for us in the community, and I'm glad to hear about the mill. Before the Green Room, I didn't know that existed. People want to find out more about the mill. How could they do so?
Themill@miller.com.
Okay. Let's get back to your book. You do have an idea here that is actually up and running.
Yep.
That you share. I went to the website, and it's where you can make a quilt fairly inexpensively. It's a fun project. It's for $25 is all the cost.
Yep.
Tell us about the process of evaluating that idea and how ultimately you said, this is a good idea. Let's go forward with it.
Yeah, so this was a fun one because it started way differently. My classmate and I in business school were trying to make money over the summer. And we were like, let's come up with some crazy ideas. And like you, we had a list. And like we were like, what can we do? And ultimately ended up on the idea of a wedding quilt. So kind of like a wedding invitation. But it looked like it was a quilt. So we hired a guy from Spain to do some art for us, and then we photoshopped.
That cost you, there's a website people should know about when they need people with other skill sites called Fiverr.com.
Yeah, Fiverr.com.
And it got its name because most of the projects are $5 or less. Your project was probably more, but
yeah, we use Upwork, I think, for that one. But yeah, Fiverr. I use Fiverr all the time. And so we got this thing, and we just printed it out. It was literally about 60 or 80 sheets of paper. I don't remember. It was a ton. We taped them together, threw them onto a bed. And then we photoshopped out all the lines, so it looked like we made this quilt. And so we put up a Shopify website, and we just put it out there. We didn't touch it. And a lady tried to buy one from us, so we tried to do the sourcing. We didn't have anything. We had no idea what we were doing. And so we realized it was too expensive. And so we were like, okay, well, that's okay. And my mom was a sewer. She picked up quilting because she loved the idea of this wedding blanket. And so, long story short, she learned to quilt. We figured out how to make one. We tried to sell it. High Facebook click-through rates. Nobody was buying it. It's too difficult of a sale. I mean, you know, selling something in the wedding space, you got to hit people over and over and over again. And we just weren't willing to do that. And so we kind of changed the product. So we were at – my mom was at a – my mom's my business partner, by the way. We were at a wedding convention, and we quilted together the logo. And this DJ walked up, and this is what I talk about Discover. Like, Discover can come from anywhere. The DJ was like, why don't you color that in? Because it was just the outline of, like, someone's name. And so we're like, oh, that's an interesting idea. So we were going to a wedding show, like, a week later. And we're like, let's test this. Like, we don't need to sell. Like, mm-hmm. We're not really in sales mode. We're in discovering mode. So we made a placemat, and I think it was Halloween themed or something. And so we put it out there and just gave people like fabric markets to color. And it was awesome. We probably had 300-400 people coloring throughout the whole day. And so we were like, all right, well, let's try and sell this. Let's go to a show. We went to the Wheeler Historic Farm up here in Salt Lake, and we tested it out. So we made a couple of them, made it $300 or $400. I can't remember. And we're like, okay, well, there's a market. But like what we were looking for was this people's willingness to buy, and their decision-making process was taking too long. And so we knew that we'd have to come up with like a marketing plan. And so I was like, Mom, my background's in game development, or I've got a lot of backgrounds, but one of them is game development. And so I was like, let's make a card game or something, like we can hook people in to sell these other products. And when we did that, we started showing these cards to quilting shops, and they freaked out. they're like, this is insane. Like, I can't believe no one's ever done this before. You know, like, if you could use it to calculate fabric, like, we would sell it for you. And, I mean, these other two ideas never had that type of, like, energy behind them. And so we kept pushing forward. We got a huge purchase order. It was, like, $3,500. We're like, maybe we're onto something. You know, like, and it was, like, this process. But it was all this little bitty iterations without spending a ton of money.
And where is it now?
We're doing good. We're in a phase where we're trying to pay off all of our loans so mm-hmm. that we can actually reinvest that capital into marketing. Because it doesn't make sense to be in and do a better experiment. Sure. Is really what I want to say.
So Tim, we've only got time for one last question. In the open, I mentioned you're the director of the co-working space called The Mill at Salt Lake Community mm-hmm. College. We talked about that. We've talked about one of the companies you started, Random Breakfast, your current company, OurFirstQuilt.com. You're also the executive director at the Park City Angels. In a minute or less, tell us about the Park City Angels. They're here local. What do they do? And when should people in the community here think about Park City Angels?
So I think it's getting – so Park City Angels is a local investment group. We're about 40 people or so, 40, 50 people, all individual people who really want to give back to the community. And I think that's unique and doing it in a way that's investing in Utah mostly. And so I screen most of the deals. And I think people should get involved much earlier than they think to come meet with me. So I screen the deals. I'm the first point of contact. So the investment side comes a little bit later, but you and I have talked about this. Having people develop relationships with the investment community takes time. And when you get a champion in the room, it makes it so much easier to have that investment conversation.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for your time this morning. We've been speaking with Tim Cooley. He is the author of a book called Find Your Killer Idea, The Essential Guide to Discover the Right Business. Roger and I both read the book. We really enjoyed the book. It's definitely, it's a quick read. It's a very practical guide. It would make a great holiday gift. I believe they can find it on Amazon.com.
Correct.
Amazon.com. Tim, thank you for joining us this
morning
on Mountain Money.
Thanks, Tim.